This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
For this interview, I'm linking directly to Chile, where with Dr. Dave Jones, who's a former Jodcaster, because he's been a co-author on a paper that's appeared in the journal Science, and it's all about a special planetary nebula. So, Dave, can you tell us a bit about what the paper's found?
Okay, so probably the first thing I should do is try to explain what a planetary nebula is. So a planetary nebula has nothing to do with planets first. It's a misnomer because the guy who discovered the first planetary nebula, William Herschel, he also discovered the planet Uranus, and he thought that his new nebula, he knew it wasn't a planet, but it had a sort of similar appearance. It was sort of fuzzy and disc-like, and so it looked a little bit like a planet, even though it wasn't, so he called it a planetary nebula.
Okay.
But in fact, what it is a shell of gas around a dying star. So when a star similar to the mass of the sun comes to the end of its life, it throws off its outer layers, and then the core of the star, which is left, gets very hot and emits very high energy radiation, which sort of lights up this shell of gas, and that's what we see as a planetary nebula, this glowing shell of gas on the dying star.
So that's how the sun will end up then, I guess.
That's the idea, yeah. But the truth is that we're not really sure that the sun will end up like that. So I'll kind of come back to that later on.
Okay.
So our paper is based on a particular planetary nebula called Fleming 1, which shows a really unusual structure. So the basic idea behind this process of which the outer layers of the star are thrown away is that if a star is spherical, which all stars basically are, the shell of gas should be basically spherical as well. But most of the planetary nebulae that we see are aspherical. They have a huge range of shapes, ranging from highly axisymmetric things like very bipolar structures, sort of cylindrical or like hourglasses, through to very irregular and amorphous things. And then also different structures within those. So we see ring-like features or jets, big swirly jets. And this particular nebula is one of those that displays these extreme jets. So maybe you'll be able to put a picture in the show notes. This nebula has two jets, one in each direction, which appear to be rotating, so they're kind of swirling around as they move away from the star that's at the center of the nebula.
Yeah, you can see that really clearly on the picture, actually.
Yeah, it's a beautiful object. And so we didn't really understand how you could make that. So the best theory that we've had, and it's been around for maybe 30 or 40 years, is that actually the star at the center, the star that's dying, has a partner. There's another star close by, and the interaction between the dying star and its partner, which is orbiting around it, causes the outer shells of the star to be thrown away in these strange formations.
Okay.
And up until now, in this particular nebula, nobody has been able to find the partner. Nobody has been able to prove that there's two stars, there's a binary system at the center of this nebula, and that's what we've found.
Oh, wow. So is it a case of peering in there and then you can resolve these two stars apart from each other?
No, it's so far away and they're so close together that even with the biggest telescopes in the world, it still looks like one star because they're so, so close together, you can't tell the two apart. So the way that we did it is by using spectroscopy. So that's breaking the light from the stars down into its component colors. And so stars have very specific spectra, they have particular features, particular wavelengths of light that are absorbed or emitted. Mm-hmm. And by looking at how those vary, we can measure that the stars are actually orbiting around one another. So, for example, when the star is moving towards you in its orbit, if you can imagine a star sort of circling around in front of you, at one point in its orbit, it will be moving towards you, and at half a period later on, it will be moving away. And due to a thing called the Doppler effect, which means that the wavelength of light is shifted depending on how fast an object is moving, which is the same process that happens with fire truck sirens. So when you hear a car or a fire truck go past you, it sort of makes this change in pitch, it goes meow, right? It changes from a high pitch to a low pitch.
Yes.
And it does exactly the same thing, but with light. So when it's moving towards you, the light moves ever so slightly towards the blue. And when it's moving away from you, it goes ever so slightly towards the red. So by looking at how these lines that we identify in the spectra of our star, how they move, if they move to the blue or to the red, over a period of time, we can see the star moving around in its orbit and imply that there are two stars there.
Okay. Yeah, because I was looking in the actual paper, and there's a really nice graph where it shows this radial velocity based on the Doppler effect. And I was just wondering, with that one, is that looking at a combination of both of the stars, or is it just looking at one of them?
It's actually pretty much looking only at one of them, because one star is so hot that almost all of the light it emits is in the ultraviolet. And we were using a telescope, an instrument that looked in the optical light, the light that our eyes see. So at that wavelength, we really only see one of the stars, because the other star is way, way bluer.
Okay. And what's the nature of the two stars that are in there?
So this is one of the very interesting things, is that previously people had made models of how you would make these jets with a binary star. Based on how the jets look, how swirly they are, they would guess that the two stars are orbiting around each other every 1,000 or 10,000 days, something like that. And we found that the two stars are orbiting around each other every 1.2 days.
Wow, every 1.2 days.
I mean, imagine that. You know, so the Earth goes around the Sun every 365 days, but here we have two stars which are going around each other every 1.2 days. So it's much closer together, and this would have been a problem, except that we found that both stars are dying stars. So both of them are the leftover core when a star dies, which is called a white dwarf. Probably means that when the jets were actually fired off, the period of the orbit was actually 10,000 days. But then after that, there's been a process of mass transfer. So one star has stripped material from the other one because they're so close, and resulted in the formation of this system with two dying stars rather than just one.
Yeah, that was going to be the next question I was going to ask. Actually, was going to be like, what was the history of this system? How did it end up in that state? Is it like you're seeing the planetary nebula of one of the stars only, or a combination of planetary nebulae of both of them? Have they both been through that stage?
So we think that it's from basically the leftover of one of the stars. So what happens when a star begins to die is it kind of inflates. It blows up between 10 and 100 times its radius. And then this is why the stuff gets blown away, because it's less tightly connected to the star. So we think it's some point a long time ago, one of the stars went through this phase and got rid of all of its outers. At the same time, the orbit probably shrunk a little bit. It became closer together. And then at some late point, the other star began to die. So the rate at which stars die is dictated by how heavy they are, how massive they are. And more massive stars burn their fuel faster, so they die quicker. So we think that the partner star was probably more massive, lost all of its mass. And then the second star, the one that is actually forming the planetary nebula, it also began to die. But as it lost some of its mass, this mass was dragged by gravity towards the other star and formed a disk as it spiraled in. And it was this disk that launched the jets. But then later on, when the star became even closer to dying, the mass that was transferred much faster. So rather than there just being a slow stream of gas that formed this disk, it was kind of like a runaway transfer of mass because the stars were so close together. And this runaway transfer meant that in the end, the two stars ended up embedded in the same sphere of gas that we call it a common envelope. Basically, the stars orbit around in this gas, and it's kind of like going round in treacle, if you can imagine. So they end up being slowed down, and that means that the orbit shrinks. You know, they kind of file in towards each other.
Uh-huh.
And as they throw off this envelope, and so you end up shrinking the period of the stars down to the current period of 1.2 days, but also you throw off material around the stars, and that material is then what ends up being the center of this planetary nebula. So if you look at the picture, you see that the jet are from the period earlier on, and then there's a sort of central core, which is sort of like a barrel shape, but with a little ring in the middle.
Yes.
And this barrel shape and the ring is probably the remnant of this an envelope, this collection of gas, the sphere of gas that enveloped the two stars.
Okay. And does that mean then that the stars are still spiraling together, or have they stopped that phase now?
Well, they will be spiraling towards each other, but now much more slowly. So the only thing that's slowing them down now is a combination of a few effects, one of which is gravitational radiation. So the two stars are so close together that they actually emit, or we think they should emit, waves of gravitational radiation, which no one has managed to detect. But this means that they slowly begin to spiral towards each other, but very, very slowly. So in fact, we don't think that they will, anytime soon, they will never meet.
Mm-hmm. So obviously the Sun is not in a binary system with another star, but you were talking before about how it may or may not end up as a planetary nebula. So why is the history uncertain?
Exactly. So like I said, in this system, you had the interaction between the two stars actually helped to throw off the material that became the center of this planetary nebula. And in all of the textbooks and things, it's always been said that all stars that are like the Sun will form a planetary nebula. But now we're actually not so sure. We think that there's a possibility that you might actually need to either be heavier than the Sun or need to have a binary partner in order to help get rid of the mass fast enough, to get rid of this shell fast enough in order for us to be able to see it. So you can imagine that there's this shell of gas that's being thrown off into space, but it's quite tenuous, it's quite thin, there's not much of it there. And when it gets to so far out from the star, so if it happens very slowly, the star at the center, the core, doesn't get hot enough, fast enough, to light up the shell until the shell is so far away from the star that it's too thin for us to be able to see, really. So it's kind of drifted off and merged into the space around it. So it's possible that this process won't happen fast enough.
Okay.
In the Sun, both the ejection of the outer layers, as well as the change of the central core into a white dwarf, it won't happen fast enough that you'll be able to see a planetary nebula. The material will just fade away and drift off into space. But the truth is that right now, we're not really sure.
Okay, so it's going to be billions of years before that happens anyway to the Sun. So I suppose the thing is that you've got to try and catch these different planetary nebulae in their quite brief phases to try and work out what they all do. It's sort of a zoo of different creatures, isn't it, really?
Oh, yeah. In this particular system, in this Fleming 1 nebula, we think we have it pretty well tied down. We have a good idea of what the past of the system is and what it's doing now. But for all of the other planetary nebulae, which show all of these weird range of sizes and shapes and structures, we don't know exactly how each one of them was formed. So we have to investigate each one of them individually and then be able to piece them together to try and get an idea of, for any given star or any given pair of stars, what we think their final state will be.
And with Fleming 1, was there a lot of computer modeling involved in coming to that conclusion about how it was formed?
Yeah, so there was a lot of work in the past. As I said, the trying to determine how it could form, and the computer models, these simulations, showed the best way to do was with a binary, and it was also these simulations that showed that the orbital period of the stars should be a lot longer than it currently is. So it was finding from these simulations, and the fact that we find that there are two white dwarfs in this system, that we could piece together this history whereby at some point it was actually a lot longer period and has now been shrunk down.
It's quite a unique system then. The last thing I wanted to ask you about was just about the history of the whole observation of it. I understand it's not actually a newly observed object. It's been known about for quite a long time.
Absolutely. It's been one of the archetypes of something that must be formed by a binary for so long. So it was discovered in the 1910s, I think. And ever since then, it's been observed by many, many people. And every time it's been reobserved, we find something new and exciting. So in the beginning, with the telescopes that were around when it was first discovered, it was just it just looked like an odd star. And then as the telescopes got bigger and better, we were able to see the jets and these structures. And then our observations prove that there's a binary in the center and also reveal much more intricate features, little blobs of gas that form this ring in the center, which before no one had ever seen. And that's even more conclusive evidence that the binary is responsible for everything, because this ring-like structure is very common amongst all of the other nebulae that we've found that have binary central stars, and there's about 40 of them now. There's a sort of prevalence towards having these ring-like structures. So we think that that's like a key that the system at the center is actually a binary. So in fact, now to try and find more of these systems so that we can understand them better, we are hunting for the binaries in systems with rings, because we think the rings will be the best, that the star in the middle is actually two stars.
Okay. Well, very satisfying to solve a mystery like that. That's brilliant. Despite the quality of the line at points there, thank you very much, Dave, for joining us from Chile.